Not
people
quite.
Were used to getting the notes still. Mm-hmm. So.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today is the 9th of February, and this is the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. I am calling this meeting to order, and I will note for the record that it is raining like stink. There are a lot of people that joined us today that look like they had to find their way in from outdoors. We appreciate the extra effort it took to get here. Ms. Deister, we are going to be hearing from the Oregon Real Estate Agency today, so I'm going to go ahead and open the public hearing and ask if you could lead us in.
Okay. House Bill 5037 is the budget for the Oregon Real Estate Agency. Once again, this is a 100% other funds budget. Their revenues come from primarily licensing fees, and they license and regulate and enforce real estate laws that are applicable to brokers, property managers, and real estate marketing organizations. The real estate commissioner is appointed by the governor, and he administers the agency. Mr. Bentley here. The agency also supports the real estate board, which has 7 industry members and 2 public members, and all of those folks are appointed by the governor. I think, generally speaking, with regard to this agency's budget, not to steal their thunder, but if you were to take a look at the governor's budget document or the Orbitz reports associated with it, you would see 2 what we call policy option packages. The first one is a revenue reduction package to balance their budget within current law existing revenues. Basically, you are going to hear about the fact that in the run-up to the housing bubble, you had a lot of people coming into the industry becoming licensed. That resulted in a lot of fee revenue for the agency. They were able to basically operate off of that fee revenue for quite a while, even through the downturn in the housing market when they lost a bunch of licensees. Well, that dynamic has now sort of played itself out, and the agency's other policy option package would basically add back all of the staff that they might otherwise have to reduce, and it is predicated on the passage of Senate Bill 68, which is a statutory fee increase for the agency. Now, we have possession of that bill, but I didn't get it in time to post it along with this hearing because of the 48-hour rule. So, you will be hearing this. We will be having a public hearing on that bill specifically in the future. I can't exactly tell you what day. It can either be scheduled in conjunction with the agency's work session for the budget or separately, possibly prior to that, if that's the committee and the co-chair's desire. We can sandwich that in there and make it work. So, but their policy option package 101 would be predicated on the passage of that bill and add back those positions that they might otherwise have to cut if that fee increase is not passed. Okay, so that's sort of the crib notes version of, I think, what you're going to hear a little more about, as well as the agency's mission, their goals, their performance measures, etc. So.
Very good. Any questions for Ms. Deister? In that case, let's turn to Mr. Bentley. Welcome.
Thank you.
And if you'd like to introduce yourself for the record, we'd be pleased to hear from you.
Yes, Representative Gomberg. Committee members, my name is Gene Bentley. I'm the Real Estate Commissioner for the State of Oregon. And I'm here to give you a little background on what the Real Estate Agency is for those of you who are new. The Real Estate Agency, its mission is to provide quality protection for the Oregon consumer of real estate, escrow, land development services, balanced with a professional environment conducive to a healthy real estate market. The Real Estate Agency in 5 days will be celebrating its 98th anniversary. It was originally founded on Valentine's Day, 1919. It was, interestingly enough, the first functioning real estate agency in the state of Oregon. There had been a bill passed in California to start a real estate agency, but it was deemed to be unconstitutional. And my counterpart down there, Wayne Bell, and I have some very interesting discussions as to who's first and who's not. So it's been a fund of operation. Our goals are to improve service delivery to the membership of the or the licensees, and also to protect the consumer through better educated licensees, and in addition to that, promote workforce excellence. We have, as of 2012, started the first e-licensing system in the United States, and that means that all of our licensees, if they apply for a license, they do it electronically through the internet. If they want to modify their license, they can do so. If they want to renew their license, they can do so. So consequently, they can do everything through the internet, and that's allowed us to have a great deal of efficiency in the operation. Our education, we have testing that is the responsibility of the agency, and to that end, we have the pre-license education, which is 150 hours for a brand new person wanting to become a broker, an additional 40 hours if you want to be a principal broker, and the principal broker is the supervising level. And then we have a 60-hour course that provides education for people who want to become a real estate license or a real estate property manager. All of that is overseen by the board and the agency, and I'll talk a little more about the board in a minute. In terms of training our people, we work very hard at making sure that they are very well trained, and as a result of the changes that we have undergone with going to an electronic system, we've downsized the size of the agency because we no longer have people handling paper per se. We have seven investigators, and those investigators all have been through an advanced practices course that teaches them how to be a much more skilled investigator. And as a matter of fact, one of our investigators was named the ARELO, which is the Association of Real Estate Licensing Law Officials, Investigator of the Year, a very nice compliment to the agency and to the skills and the education that we provided for the people. In terms of number of people, we currently have, in terms of brokers, we have 19,042 active brokers in the agency. That is not the full number because we have a number of inactive brokers who are not allowed to practice. In terms of licensing, our licensing operation is the electronic version that I mentioned before. It manages the e-licensing system and works with the application and renewal and criminal background check and continuing education audits for individuals who are real estate licensees. We do a number of continuing education audits, some 360 a year, and they're done randomly to make sure that we have people who are doing as they should be, taking their 30 hours of continuing education. When we originally started that process, we had a failure rate that was something in the 50-plus percent rate in terms of people being able to substantiate what they were doing in, with their CE. That now is in the high 90s, like 99, 98 range, and I think a little of it was probably as a result of one of the individuals who had created their own documents and submitted them to us is no longer a licensee, and I think the word got around, and I think people are deciding that CE is something that they should be doing. And education is very, very important. In this changing world, I think it's very important for our licensees to be up to speed. We were also talking about FIRST. We were also the first nation, our first state in the nation, to have mandatory continuing education. That started in 1971. Our regulations division is peopled with seven investigators plus support staff, and they do investigations of complaints that we receive from the public, from government agencies, from other real estate brokers and property managers. and we investigate the activity that they have gone on, including unlicensed activity. In 2016, we had a total of 445 complaints filed with the agency. Out of that, we investigated 123 of the investigations of the complaints. And with that, we also had six hearings, and I'll talk a little more about hearings in a bit.
So excuse me for interrupting. So you had 425 complaints. You investigated 123. The rest you dismissed outright. You saw on their face that they didn't require investigation. What happened to the balance of those complaints?
Chair Gomberg, two things happened. One, some of them are not our responsibility, and so they fall by the wayside. Some of them are advertising in nature, and what we do is we send them a education letter indicating that they have failed with some education that has been turned over to us, and that generally solves the problem. Occasionally, we have situations where people don't get the message the first time, and then we issue a reprimand to the individual. If that's the case and a person still doesn't get the message, then we probably will go to a suspension. We've had that case recently with an individual regarding advertising. And then the last thing that we can do is to take their license away from them so that they no longer have a license to function.
All right. Thank you.
With the land development operation, land development deals with condo filings, and last year we had 134 condo filings. That's up significantly over the last couple of years. I heard conversation earlier about what's happening in the market, and I'll talk a little more about that, but the condo activity has picked up significantly. We also oversee timeshares, and we had 56 timeshares submitted to the land development operation. Moving on, our population that we serve is the general public, applicants for a license, licensees, developers, attorneys, real estate schools, professional organizations, and government organizations. In addition to that, we also have in our organization, as I think was mentioned earlier by Michelle, the real estate board, and the real estate board is made up of seven individuals who are licensees and two individuals who are public members. We have licensees from Eugene, from Pendleton, from Lake Oswego, from Coos Bay, from Bend. Oh, they want us to, okay.
There you go.
How do I back up?
I can back up.
Good.
All right.
Thank you. I'm here to talk, not to punch the button. Coos Bay, Bend, Portland, Canby, and a couple more from Portland. We have people on the board who are do property management so that we have that expertise. We have people who are only in the commercial world. We have people who are from a one-person operation, and we have people from the largest operation, which is about 800 individuals within a single company. We have, in addition to that, people who have been president of the Oregon Association of Realtors and the Commercial Association president. So we've got a lot of people who are in very high-profile positions to be able to provide us with advice. And again, and I think as Michelle indicated, those people are all appointed by the governor, and the governor has done a great job in appointing them. Our agency managers, our deputy commissioner, Dean Owens, is a 30-year veteran of state government. Anna Higley is our e-licensing wizard, and she is our administrative services manager. Madeline Alvarado is our customer service manager, and Selena Barnes is our regulations manager. She previously was a police detective, so she brings to the agency some great skills in terms of investigation. Michael Hanovan, who is our land development manager, is also an attorney. And they do almost exclusively in very legal work with regard to condo filings. He also, in his off hours, is a JAG attorney. In terms of our program is overseen by the commissioner's position. The commissioner's position is required to have been a person who is a real estate licensee for a minimum of 5 years. And that's somewhat unusual in some agencies within state government. And it provides a good understanding of what's happening in the industry so that we're close to that. The beauty of our relationship is that the deputy commissioner, having been 30 years at state government, understands how state government functions and who or where we need to go to make things happen. So it's a very workable situation from our perspective. Our board meetings, we have 6 board meetings every year. We have tried to hold them all over the state. This year, the first 2 are going to be here in Salem because of the legislature being in session. Then in June, we will be in Lincoln City, Klamath Falls in August, Springfield in October, and Gresham in December. And we've had meetings over the years all the way from Astoria to Ontario and from Wallawa to Brookings. So we've tried to cover the entire state to get out there and be able to see what's happening in the marketplace and for the people to be able to have an opportunity to see what we're up to. Next.
Well, I'm pleased you're going to be in Lincoln City in June. I wish I was. Excuse me for interrupting.
To our key performance measures. We have 5 key performance measures. The first one, key performance measure 1, is the percent of property manager and principal brokers who meet the compliance within 45 days of a mail-in compliance review. Our target is 90. In fact, our actual is 100. Now, we have a reasonably low participation rate, and in the last go-around 2 years ago, instead of having 100, we had 69. We've done some things to kind of modify that program so that it's a little more user-friendly, and we're having a lot better success with it. Key performance measure number 2 is the percentage of investigations completed within 150 days. Our target is 60%. The actual is 78%. And a lot of that is a function of what's happening in the marketplace. Some of our investigations go much longer than 150 days. And that's because of the complexity of it and because of the issues that we're finding. We have in the past placed 5 different firms, property management firms, in receivership because of missing money. And those cases take an enormous amount of time and are very complex to work our way through. But we also have some that move rather quickly, and that gives us the ability to at least hit the target and actually exceed the target a little. KPM number 5 is the customer service percent of customers ratings, the agency's customer service as good or excellent. Our target is 85%. As you'll see in the slide, our actuals are overall 91%, timeliness 86%, accuracy of information 92%, helpfulness 85%. The availability of information, 90%, and expertise, 88%. Onward to the next one. The next 2 are areas of concern in our key performance measures, our KPMs. The first is KPM number 3, and that's the contested case actions that are resolved through informal settlement prior to a formal hearing. And the target is 85%, and our actual for fiscal year 2016 was 87%.
Excuse me, sir. I think you misspoke, and you said the target was 85. I think you meant 95.
95. I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. Thank you. And our actual was 87%. And that really boils down to the nature of the cases that we're dealing with. And in some instances where the case is pretty cut and dried from our perspective, and an issue where we think that there should be a reasonably severe sanction against the individual, We offer them the opportunity to have an agreement as far as a satisfaction, and in some instances they're reluctant to do that, and we've had a number of them wanting to go to hearing. It's expensive for both they and us to go to hearing because we end up having to have a AG support all and make the presentations in front of the ALJ, the administrative law judge. But because of the nature of it, we're unwilling to acquiesce to their desires, and that's why we end up taking it to hearing. We have not yet been unsuccessful. So if you do something bad, in my mind, you should have to pay for it in one way or another. And in this case, most often it's a matter of having your license removed from you. The other KPM that we have is KPM number 3, and that's contested cases resolved through, KPM number 4, and that's the percentage of licensees who rate the board-administered exam as good or excellent as an effective and competent ethical professional. Our target is 75%. Our actual is 64%. And what happens is, after a person receives their license, 6 months later we send them an inquiry as to how they feel the education and the exams that they had to go through to receive their license, and whether or not that allowed them to become a very professional individual and to protect the public. Generally speaking, what happens is we get a less than perfect response. And what happens is, as an individual becomes a new licensee and they're in it 6 months, what the thing they realize is that the education that we provided them and the testing that we provided them was to prevent them from harming the consumer. What it didn't do was teach them how to become an effective broker or a principal broker. And so 6 months after that, they're very actively involved in learning the business and they want to become a better broker. And we didn't teach them how to be a broker. We taught them how to not harm the consumer. And so they get a little bent off on that. One of the things we would like to do with your blessing is to go deal with DAS and LFO and see about having that moved up so that we inquire as to their attitude on whether the test and the education was good or not. And do that shortly, very shortly, after they have received their license, say in the first week or two or three at the most. And that way, I think we will get a better feel for the testing and the education we provided, and they won't be off thinking about how they're going to be successful in the business and what they have to learn to do so.
Chair Gomberg.
Yes, I have a question, and then I'm going to turn to Representative Meek. So you are surveying people who passed the test. I wonder if people who didn't pass the test might not be so positively inclined about whether it's an effective evaluation device.
Representative Gomberg, you're dead on. We get lots of people grousing about the education. A little about how we go through the testing. We, through our testing provider, are constantly monitoring the test questions. And we are revising test questions that, A, are too easy. In other words, everybody passes it. So we look at that test question and revise it. We also deal with test questions that are too hard. In other words, if you pass the test, but this question you did not pass, we also look at that and modify it so that it's a better test question. So yes, we get people talking about it, but we try to modify the test. We have about a 75% pass rate, which is pretty typical of most jurisdictions. We belong to an association called ARELA, which is the Association of Real Estate Licensing Law Officials. And in our conversation with our peers across the United States, this is a pretty average kind of pass rate for people who are trying to get their license.
Well, I appreciate that explanation. I just want to make sure my question is clear. Have you thought about surveying the 25% who don't pass?
We've talked about it, but I don't know that we're going to do so. Again, we would get a very negative response, I suspect.
All right, thank you. Representative Meek.
Thank you, Chair Gomberg. Commissioner Bentley,
quick question about the process of when you send out this survey. You said 6 months later. Is that kind of, is that an in-house policy, or is that something that is stated?
It's an in-house. Representative Meek, it's an in-house policy.
Oh, okay, so you can change it upon your own.
We would really like to have your affirmative feeling about that.
Well, just, am I going to interrupt?
No,
please. Because I think it is correct, because part of my work as a principal broker is we train agents once they get licensed how to become both, you know, professional and not harm the public, but also to be successful and, you know, provide good services to their clients. And so they don't know a thing about running a real estate business or a practice. So if they get this, and I know that the real estate license has nothing to do with running a really good practice. So I think it probably would be wise to, within a, you know, few weeks after they pass the test, they're going to still be euphoric, happy they pass the test, and give you better feedback as to their, you know, their experience with the testing process and the education process. But maybe their principal broker can give them a test a year after they've been and say, hey, have I helped you be successful? So.
Thank you, Representative
Chair.
Ms. Deister?
The only thing I would amplify is I think that the agency is asking for the go-ahead to do that, because to the extent that it changes, you know, the goalpost or their results, you're not going to have an apples-to-apples comparison between 2016 and 2017. And perhaps that, you know, just be aware of that, that if they do that, if they change the timing, that's likely to be the result. And if that's not a problem, then great. But if it is,
yeah, Chair,
you might want to say something.
Yeah, just, well, I just
yeah.
Want a response. Yeah, that as far as the commissioner is concerned, I, as myself or even, you know, our associates, everybody knows when you have a change in some type of testing or surveying, you may have skewed results for the interim. But I think in the long run, if we want to get better, you know, more factual information about what we're providing, I think that's a good way to go. I'm in favor of it if the commissioners want to do that.
Representative Reardon.
Just a quick comment on something I know very little about, but it is a paper-based test, correct? Okay, so you're...
Excuse me. Representative Gomberg, Representative Reardon, no, it is not. It's electronic.
Yeah, it's on computers.
Okay, but it's question and answers. It's not a proficiency-type test, so it's...
Correct.
Okay. So I would not expect really high... You know, 100%, because it is that type of test. I mean, it's just, in my experience, nobody likes a test, but I'd certainly support bringing it in early. I think you'd get a lot better results, more accurate results. So I would certainly encourage that move.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions?
Yes.
Yes, please, Representative.
Just thank you. I'm not an expert in real estate at all. I usually buy high, sell low. But in the same with surveys, and I know there's a science to it and almost an art, I guess I would just caution that we're identifying where the football lies and then moving the goal line to get the score that we want, and just be careful with that as we move forward.
Representative Gomberg, committee members, it's my impression that they KPMs, the key performance measures, are really yardsticks for the legislature to kind of monitor the effectiveness of the various agencies that have their KPMs. That's why I think that it would be beneficial, if you think that it's worthy to change, that you so indicate.
All right, thank you. Well, Commissioner Bentley, please continue.
Okay. Any other questions before I move on?
I think we're good.
Okay. Got it. Thank you. Okay. Now what I'm going to do is talk a little about the major budget drivers. And the major budget driver that we have in the real estate agencies, quite simply, is licensees. 96% of the revenue that we receive is from the licensees. The other 4% comes from condominium and timeshare filings. So the key to that is the number of licensees. We peaked in August of 07 at 24,607 licensees, and we bottomed out in October of 2012 at 17,965 licensees, a drop of some 6,642, or roughly a 27% drop from the top. That was a significant hit to us. But fortunately, as you heard earlier, we had a bit of a reserve, and we've been working off that reserve, and we're working it down to the point where it now needs to be replenished. In terms of escrow activities, which we also oversee, just as a yardstick of what's happening in the industry, as of 2015, we have the most current information. The 2016 information we will have at the end of March. But in 2015, the escrow volume in terms of numbers of dollars that went through escrow, and most sale transactions go through escrow. But there are a significant number of lease transactions that rarely, if ever, go through escrow. So it's not exactly a perfect yardstick. But in 2015, we had $49,599,000,000 dollars worth of escrow activity. So if that can give you kind of a yardstick of the size of the real estate industry, it's a fairly decent yardstick, understanding that it's not perfect. So the industry environment right now is, I think, supply constrained. I think virtually every transaction that I hear about that is in the fat part of the market, in other words, if you're in the market area or the price area where most of the properties are for sale, there are multiple offers being made, and in some instances more than just two or three, but four, five, and six offers. It's my understanding that that's been a bit of an issue with the consumer. The consumer is starting to get a little tired of not being successful. Part of that is that Oregon is a very strong in-migration state, and we're having a lot of people moving here. And the supply of available housing for people is not what it could be or should be. There are multiple reasons as to why that is, but the long and the short of it is that it's difficult right now for our licensees in many instances to find enough product to be able to sell. Moving on, our internal environment within the agency, our major changes are we've worked through a series of budget reductions, and I think you'll see in this next slide some of the reductions that we have been through. We have reduced the number of people we had over the last four biennia. We were at the biennium of 2011, we had 31 FTE, and we're now down to 29 FTE. We had at the same time frame in 2011, six temporary employees to cover some of the things that we needed to have happen. We've reduced that number down to a half a person, and that half a person really is working on mostly trying to get the paper that we have converted to digital images. So that's a short issue. Our temporary employment expenses are down significantly, almost 90% over the last four biennia. Our publishing costs are down almost $107,000 from 2009 to the biennium that we're in right now. And we have reduced that expense, again, about a 58% reduction over the last two biennia. Our office expenses, we relocated to a new office a year ago. And we are saving about $100,000 a year by doing so. In addition to that, we also have service and supplies that we have significantly reduced because we are moving away from paper and into a digital world. So a lot of that has had a significant downturn in the amount of money that we need and have been spending. Our major expense, 76% of our expense is people. And that is a number that continually goes up. Two things are happening with that. There are increases that the individuals have, step increases that they receive periodically. In addition to that, because we've moved away from handling paper and shuffling paper into and clerical activities into more technical activities, we've updated the skill of our people, and consequently they are a little more highly paid. Major budget issues. The market was low in 2012 when we bottomed out. We tried desperately to avoid a fee increase during the low time, and we have been reasonably successful at that. I think that the market is now as strong as it's probably going to get. It's probably going to continue to be strong for at least the next year or two, and maybe as long as 4 years out. I've been querying people in my opportunity to talk with them, people in the industry, and I get a range from anywhere from a 1 to 4 year time frame as to when they think the next downturn is. We're hopeful to be able to increase our reserves to the point where we can weather the next downturn without having to raise fees going through that downturn. In front of you, you will see some increases in the activity level, and if we can go to number seven, there we go. Our revenue, our governor ballot's budget starts out with a reserve amount of $363,000, which is about a 1 month's reserve amount. The reserve or the revenue that we have currently will produce about $6.3 million worth of income. A portion of that, which is fines that we receive for fining for various activities, we cannot retain, and it goes to the general fund. And that leaves us with about $6.6 million worth of available fees. We are hopeful to have a fee increase, which would be Senate Bill 67, and unfortunately you don't have 68 in front of you yet, but we can talk about that when that opportunity arises. Our current service level costs would be $7.9 million, roughly, and that would leave us with a, after some adjustments for the DOJ cost and these are upward adjustments for us, or less expense, and state government service charges, that would leave us with a governor's budget of $7,844,000 and change. And that would leave us at the end of the biennium with $9,972,399, or about 3 months worth of reserves. It's just a touch under 3 months. Questions?
Any additional questions?
Moving on. Proposed legislation. We have two bills that are proposed. Senate Bill 67, which is technical changes to ORS 696, which is the legislation which drives the real estate agency. Most of those are just housekeeping kinds of changes. There are two changes of a little more significance. One of them removes the requirement for a individual who is handling funds, a broker or principal broker or a property manager who is handling funds from running it through their client trust account if those funds are a check made out to another individual and not to the entity for which the licensee is involved. So if you're a courier of a check between the seller or the buyer or the tenant or the landlord, and it's just a check made out to one of those parties and all you are is the courier, it doesn't make any sense to have to run it through your client trust account. And if you read the technical version of what's in place today, it says that you need to do that. And from a very practical point of view, I suspect there are a lot of licensees who aren't doing that. This change will then make that more realistic. The other thing is licensed property managers work under a licensed property management agreement between they and the owner of the property, and they can represent tenants for that property but they cannot represent tenants for any property for which they do not have a property management agreement. And this just makes clear that. And that's Senate Bill 67. Senate Bill 68, which you have not received yet, deals with our fee increase. Our fee increase is about a 30% increase in the major two fees, and those two fees are the initial application to become a licensee and the continuing or renewal of your license. They are going from, or is proposed from, $230 every 2 years to $300 every 2 years. And we will deal with that when we have that opportunity. Also that, well, I don't want to get into the 67, or 68, I'm sorry. Moving on to slide 9, stakeholders. Senate Bill 67 was a result of really about a year and a half's worth of activity. We started in mid 2015 within the agency reviewing ORS 696 to determine what, if any, changes needed to be made to that legislation. After we got the agency's input as to things that they conceived as being necessary for changes, we then convened a work group, and that was in January of last year. And we had individuals from the real estate board. We had real estate government individuals, both in the LFO analyst and the DAS analyst, and also we were fortunate enough to be able to have a licensee who is also a legislator, Sal Esquivel, in attendance. We had some 16 individuals out of the industry. We had a number of past presidents of the Oregon Association of Realtors or current presidents. We had individuals who represented some of the largest companies around. We had individuals who represented the property management world. We had individuals who represented the commercial world. And all of that went through to involve them in what we ended up with is Senate Bill 67. So, in addition to that, our 10% reduction document, you can find that in the appendix. But other than that, I'm open to questions.
Any questions at this point? Yes, Representative.
The question has nothing to do with the budget at all, but just curious, is in your industry, if you could tell me if there's been a change in the demographics of the agents over the years. We've had quite a change in our population, with more, at least in my district, a lot more people of color and from different countries. And so, do you know if that's reflected in your industry at all? Or?
Co-Chair Gomberg, Representative Reardon, yes, there is a slow but sure change, but not a significant change relative to other jurisdictions. We are starting to, we go through probably 200 new people every month, and we also have about 100 leave, so we net increase about 100 every month in this last year, and that's up significantly from what it was. We were losing probably almost 1,000 to 1,500, depending on which time frame you're looking at, back 6-7 years ago. But in terms of people of color, yes, there are some coming in, but not very many. Does that answer your question?
Almost. Follow-up, sir?
Please.
I just, could you give us an idea of how people know about real estate as a possible career? Is there an outreach program of some kind, or is it just because your uncle did it? Or?
Co-Chair Gomberg, Representative Reardon, I'm not aware of any outreach that is being done. Not that it isn't happening, and I'm just not aware of it.
Okay, that's fair. Thank you.
Any other questions? And Mr. Bentley, did you have more for us today?
Unfortunately, I can't, because of Senate Bill 68, have anything more.
All right. Well, let me ask you one last question before we let you go. You made reference earlier today to criminal background checks. Are those being done by an outside agency, or?
How do we do our background checks?
Representative Gomberg, those are done by the Oregon State Police and through the FBI, and they do a background check on everybody who is a new applicant.
All right, very good.
And we find that in some instances we find issues that we deny their ability to have a license. Not very many, but a few.
Very good. Any other questions? Mr. Bentley, I appreciate you taking some time with us today. We're going to give you a little bit of a break here, and I'm going to turn to Mr. Otero.
Thank you.
Of course, we'll ask you to introduce yourself for the record.
Co-Chair Gomberg and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Robert Otero, and I'm an analyst with the DAS Chief Financial Office. What you're about to see here today is a standardized presentation that is to orient the committee to the governor's budget recommendations and adjustments for all agencies. So you'll be seeing this throughout our CFO presentations. As the commissioner highlighted, one of the agency's emerging issues is the licensee dropped by approximately 30%. And has grown since the recession. They've recovered since then. Most of the fees have not been raised in over 20 years, and the governor's budget includes a fee increase to maintain existing services for the agency. This chart represents expenditures for the agency from the 2013-15 actuals. You could see that there's all the way to the 2017-19 governor's budget. There's minimal growth within the agency, mainly accounting for inflation. And then it shows how the agency has reduced staff to maintain low costs within the agency. This chart represents the expenditure categories for the agency. As you can see, almost 80% of the agency is personal services, and a small amount, less than 25%, is for services and supplies for the agency. This chart represents the revenue history for the governor's budget. As you can see, the main driver here is the agency has is for the fee increase. It's easy to see that if you look here at businesses and licenses, which is the main revenue source, it has grown slightly but remained relatively flat, and the agency has been using its beginning balance to offset cost and to maintain low fees for the licensees, but the governor's budget increases them going forward. The investments in the governor's budget increases various fees to sustain current agency operations and also to maintain a healthy reserve balance for the agency. Also are some statewide adjustments to the price list and state government service charges and general rates for the agency, which reduce the rates from the agency request budget. Other than that, that concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
Any questions?
Sure. Mr. Meek, can you go back to the previous slide there? Right there, at the bottom right, should that have been a 2017-19?
Co-Chair Gomberg and Representative Meek, yes, it should have been 17-19.
I'm going to confirm that. Okay, thank you. All right.
Very good. Any other questions? Well, thank you both so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Not at all. All right. We'll move to the public testimony portion of the hearing. I have two people signed up. If there's anybody else interested in testifying, we'd be happy to hear from them. But I'd like to invite Mr. Gravenhorst, Mr. Gillins to come forward.
All yours. Thank you, sir.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, who would like to go first?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Sean Jellions representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. Fortunate enough to have our current president, George Grabenhorst, with us as well in support of House Bill 5037. I think you guys saw a pretty good overview of where the agency has been and where they're heading in the future. They did a very good job financially of weathering the storm of losing 30% of their licensees. I think that our association certainly felt that as well, as we saw the significant downturn. And we were fortunate that prior to the recession and the run-up, the agency did actually build up a pretty good ending fund balance, and they were able to use that through the last couple of sessions. It was not a surprise to us that this fee increase was coming. I think Senator Devlin last full session flagged for us that the ending fund balance was getting too small, and that we should expect this was coming. And the real estate commissioner, I think, as he laid out, did an excellent job of going throughout the state, informing us that a fee increase was likely coming, and then we've sort of had conversations about it throughout. Knowing my nature, I wanted to oppose the fee increase just to make him nervous, but our members are much more kind than I am, including our good president, and they realize sort of the value of this fee increase and what they would be getting. We are in support then of our policy option package 101, which sort of fills out their budget with that, and I believe that Mr. Cleave, my counterpart here in the building, testified in favor of Senate Bill 68 in the Policy Committee. So with that, I think we're happy to answer any questions. I don't know, Mr. President, did you have anything to ask?
I think Sean's covered it very well.
We'll just have you he's introduced you twice. What about any day? Have you introduced yourself
again,
please?
I'm George Grabenhorst, president of the Oregon Association of Realtors. I think he's stated the position very well. Our association is in support of this, and we would like to see it move forward.
Excellent. Any questions for this panel? Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
A pleasure to have you here. Is there anybody else who would like to testify today? Well, I don't see anybody jumping forward, so I'm going to... anything else for purposes of the hearing? Yes.
Just a brief comment.
Please.
I'm new to this, and so it's... wonderful to see a well-run, professionally run organization that's not taking money from the general fund, too. So it's self-supporting. So appreciate your work. I think it benefits all of us.
Well, I'll just add to that. It's nice to see the people who are paying the fees coming in and saying they don't mind paying more.
That's true. Talking to you, sir.
Yes, Senator. For those of you that are watching the process by which we craft a statewide transportation package, there's going to be a special along with the Channel 6 5 o'clock news and KOIN tonight that's going to be covering that effort.
Interesting. Thank you for mentioning that, Senator. All right, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing.
And fees.
Pardon me? Ms. Deister, we're going to be back here on Monday.
Correct.
And we will have a new analyst with us at that point.
Yes. Yes, you will. I believe that up early next week is at some point. I'm not sure about the order, but I believe the Department of Aviation is coming up. And
I believe we've got aviation on Monday, and we may have veterans on Tuesday and Wednesday.
That sounds about right, actually, if my memory serves. And that will be Gregory and Amanda, so you'll get to meet our other staff folks as they rotate through this chair.
Meet the whole team?
Exactly.
Excellent. Anything else you need to share with us today?
I don't believe so. Obviously, if you have any questions about this budget or if you think of things that you might not have thought to ask today.
Found an hour.
Feel free to get in touch with me, and I will do my best to chase down the answer for you.
Excellent. Colleagues, I'll remind you that tomorrow evening the statewide Ways and Means Roadshow kicks off here in Salem, I believe in this room.
Yep.
And so if you haven't had enough of legislating and budgeting over the last couple of days, you're welcome to stick around late on Friday night and join those of us that are on full to hear more from the public. Anything else for the good of the order?
Oh, I'll see you Saturday.
Thank you, Chair.
Then we will adjourn.